Par for the course, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Admiral Horatio Lord Nelson of Medicare Podcasts. Speaking of quitters, he quit smoking in 2015, Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hello, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast again. We are so happy to have you joining us today. We're here to talk about Medicare and whatever other silly subjects come to mind. This is the opportunity that you have to learn that Medicare is not going to be a scary thing for you to approach. In fact, with our professional guidance, you're going to find yourself crossing the threshold between Obamacare and Medicare almost seamlessly. And you'll look in your rearview mirror and see that that was not a really scary proposition at all. I am your Medicare expert, Doug Jones, as my Canadian nephew probably just told you. And I am here to promote the knowledge that you're going to find in my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's available on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Amazon has four different iterations. It has a paperback. It has a Kindle ebook version. It has a hardcover for the first time ever. And it has an audio book. So if you want to just listen to the Medicare for the Lazy Man 2022, you can do that. Just close your eyes, lay back, and listen to my dulcet tones read the book for you. Now, the problem is that they're a little lax, they're a little slow in getting the audio book on the sales page where it should be. But if you go to Amazon.com and put in the search window, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2022, you're going to find that collection of books. And I hope you find them to be helpful. Within each of those books is a reminder that I am able to help you acquire the Medicare insurance that you might need to fulfill all of your Medicare protection. When you get Medicare, that's not the end of it, because Medicare coverage has a lot of gaps and flaws. So you're going to need some other coverages that are fairly inexpensive to complete the protection. And that's what I specialize in. So I also specialize in asking my broadcast or my podcast engineer to play our 30-second radio spot. I'm going to do that now. And the way I ask him is to quiet down.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
There you go. He got the message, and you got to hear the 30-second radio spot, pretty much a synopsis of the ways that you can access the information that we have to offer. Randy, thank you for playing that radio spot. I never get tired of listening to that with the five-man band, the combo in the background. I think we refer to them as the Rolling Stones. I hope they never find out that I'm not paying any royalties for the use of their music. How are things today?
Good, good. Let's see, what is today? Today's Thursday.
Thursday.
We're almost at the end of a broadcasting week already.
We certainly are. We certainly are. I also noticed that we had a stellar day in podcast downloads on Easter Sunday. And normally, I get the most severe critic to listen to our podcast episode before I post them. And generally speaking, I post them in the evening. For Monday's episode, I would post it on Sunday evening. But in this case, I did the Monday episode a day early. I did it on Sunday morning, which happened to be Easter Sunday. And I'm wondering if it might not be a good idea to always do them a day early, because we had a major increase in downloads and Presumably listeners, I guess.
I think that's a good idea. We should we should trot that out and see what happens.
All right, let's run it up the flagpole and see if anybody salutes it.
Yeah.
Hey, I've got exciting news for you today. This is the favorite topic of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast that your buddies down at the Buffalo Chip are always anxious to hear. It's a mailbag.
Oh, I know. You know, bottom line, I was in there over the weekend for just a little bit of a visit.
Uh-huh.
They just about grabbed me by the shirt collar and threw me out because they have gone wanting for mailbag items lately.
Well, as I explained to you, many of our people, I'm selling lots of insurance, acquiring new clients all the time, but many of the people go to the excellent website that you and your lovely staff designed. And so they're not really communicating with me in letter form. They're not saying, "Dear Doug, you know, here's my question." They're saying, "I'm going to answer this question and that question, this question, that question. Then I'm going to push this button and the questionnaire will arrive on Doug's computer completely securely." So they're not offering me the opportunity to learn the details about their situation. They're just saying, "Here's my date of birth. Here's where I live. Tell me what it would cost. Thank you very much." And so that's why we have less mailbag content than we used to have. But I got a few now, and we can actually go through them if you'd like.
So I think, you know, just in honor of the Buffalo Chip, let's just make sure that all the guys at the Chip, the Buffalo Chip in Cave Creek, Arizona, you know, listen up, because we're going to meet your requirements for some mailbaggers.
I can hear them replaying this now. Everybody's going, "Shh, let's listen. Let's listen carefully. Shh. Here it is.
They're reading the mailbag items. Hold on, guys."
Ah, boy, oh boy. All righty. The first one we have is from a gentleman named Jules. And I gave Jules a shout out a couple of episodes ago because he has become one of our favorite listeners, or one of our, certainly our most loyal listeners, along with some other names that you've heard in the past, our Steve from Texas. And we've got our gentleman from New Jersey, whose brother also contacted me, Dominic Regina. And so Jules has joined the stellar ranks of regular listeners. And so earlier this month, he wrote me, and I numbered all of the entries so that I would read them in order. But he said he was responding to something that I told him earlier. So on April 4th, he said, "As ever, thank you for your confident reassurances." He says, "I'm new to the game and have been dealing only with the VA, the Veterans Administration, in the past, to which there were no costs to track, no sites to visit, et cetera." I think what happened was he said, "Hey, I've got some medical." Oh, I remember what happened. I read this one when it first happened. He sent me an email, which I read on the air. And then at the end of the email, he said, "Oh, fun fact, my wife broke her arm." And she lives in Florida in the wintertime. He lives in Maine. And so he said, "My wife broke her arm." Now he's talking about the bills coming in from her treatment for the broken arm or hand or something she broke. And he said, "I did have a small procedure done in March at a VA hospital here in Maine that might have had Medicare crossover implications, the likes of which I may never comprehend. I will go back to my lazy man status and just chill. You are a good agent." So that was very nice of him. But obviously he was asking a question. I said, "Thanks for the kind words. I learned a long time ago that spending time and effort trying to ensure that no mistakes were being made by Medicare was a huge waste. They make a big deal about your ability to keep track of your medical expenses online, but I really don't see the point. You are better off ignoring the economics unless you have a reason to worry about the accuracy of their payments." And then he said, "Okay, here's a question for you. I haven't received a number of claim notifications about the broken wrist my wife endured on day 3 of her Medicare inception. These notices break down," he said, "I haven't received," and then he says, "these notices break down the various costs for the various parties. To date, my wife has $335.87 applied to her deductible, her $2,490 deductible. How, when, et cetera, does this get billed and paid?" So I said, "Well, thanks for sharing my thoughts with your friends, Jules." Oh, I may have skipped a paragraph in there. After the government and the Medicare Supplement Insurance Company finish with their billing processes, the doctors and the other providers will be told what is being paid to them and what is being applied to the deductible. At that point, their clerical staff will prepare an invoice for you, actually for your wife, that will ask to have the unpaid balance of the Medicare-approved amounts paid to them. This process can take months before those invoices arrive in your mailbox. Until you receive bills from your doctors, hospitals, etc., you have no obligation to pay anything at all. If the amounts shown on the invoices and the explanations of benefits do not make any sense to you, that is the time to get on the phone with the billing staff to sort it out. Let me know how things look as the process moves forward. So then he says, this is like 2 weeks later. He says, this is Jules once again, clawing inquisitively at your font of knowledge. The $233 Medicare deductible on Laura's high deductible plan G, how does that get tracked? I have paid a few small bills to providers for the treatment of her broken wrist. Does that reduce the deductible? Should I keep a running list of what I have paid? And I said, hiya, Jules. Everything I have read says that the total high deductible plan G deductible of $2,490 this year includes that $233 Part B deductible. So the way I understand it, if there are expenses under $233, you have to pay 100%. If the expenses exceed $233, you will be expected to pay only 20% until the amount you have paid equals $2,490. After that, 100%, meaning the plan will pay 100%. You have to pay nothing. As for keeping a running total, I think you should do that until you get tired of it and then relax and assume the best. That significant errors are unlikely to happen. Once in a while over the years, I've received an unexpected bill and have called the doctor's billing clerk to find out what was going on. And I've always received explanations that cleared up my confusions. Just recently, I had walking pneumonia plus COVID. So I sure know how to have fun, don't I? So I went to a local urgent care to get dosed up. Later, I received a letter from them saying that there was a huge problem with my Medicare supplement and there would be big trouble if I didn't contact them immediately. So when I finally got someone on the phone, we discovered the problem. They had submitted my claim to the wrong insurance company. So mistakes do happen, but in my experience, they are infrequent and not worth spending all of your spare time worrying about. And then he said, thank you, Doug. There may be a podcast episode in that question somewhere. Speaking of which, I'm heading over to listen to episode 326 now. So I'm always happy to have guys like Jules in the audience. That was, he was referring to episode 326, and we are today recording, I think, episode 330 or 331. So here, change of pace, we have correspondence that just arrived recently from a woman in Kansas City, Kansas, not Kansas City, Missouri, but Kansas City, Kansas. I'm not going to say her name because it's very recognizable, very distinct. And so I don't want her to, I don't want her friends pointing fingers at her after they hear her name on the podcast. But as a person that's new to Medicare, I find this sort of correspondence instructive for a lot of people. It says, hi, I have found your podcast and I find it very informative and enjoyable to listen to. And, you know, I'm very likely to be embarrassed by that sort of praise. And so I often think about Randy as being the contributing factor to people enjoying the podcast. Anyway, she says, I hope you can help with a few questions I have. I have to add that I'm a very indecisive person and also a Libra. So I have a hard time making up my mind. I guess that's two reasons why you might be easily confused by Medicare. She says, my birthday is October 12th, and I'm going to turn 65 in 2022. I'm currently working 30 hours a week, and I qualify for our company's medical insurance. We get a discount if we pass 3 of 5 benchmarks. I do, and I currently pay $125 a month for dental, vision, and medical. I'm trying to say that I'm happy with my insurance at work, but I thought I was going to retire a few years ago, and so I applied for Social Security benefits at age 62, and I've been drawing those although often they have held out some each year because I make more than I should. My questions, if I decide to work less and not qualify for my work insurance, what would you recommend for me? I currently take only one drug, which is a generic. I'm pretty healthy, and I have only needed wellness checks. I rarely get sick. I know that could change later on. Or if I decide to keep working and keep my insurance at work for a while, when do I work less, or when I do decide to work less or retire, will I still be able to pick up insurance without having a health question or health questionnaire? And would I be able to get Part D without penalty? And when would I have to do that? I could decide to quit my work insurance a month after 65 or 6 months or a year. I just can't decide what I want to do. I'm not sure, but if you understand all my questions, I hope you can help. If it would be better to call you, I could do that. And she said, I live in Kansas City, Kansas. So I said, thanks for writing and thanks for the kind words about the podcast. I have some excellent news. You're sitting in the catbird seat holding all the cards. The primary decision for you is whether and when you want to slow down or retire. If you enjoy your work, and if that continues, then keep working until they carry you out of there feet first, I should have said. On the other hand, if you want a little more freedom and flexibility, the financial consequences of leaving the company plan will be almost painless. Your company's generosity makes your current arrangement very inexpensive. So enrolling in Medicare, a Part D plan, and a Medicare supplement will cost somewhat more than you are paying now for insurance. That cost will still be a bargain compared to what many people are paying. In order, I would expect you to pay $170.10, that's for the Medicare Part B, $6.60, that's for the least expensive prescription drug plan, and $30 for my specially recommended Medicare supplement. And then dental is harder to predict, but the Cadillac plan that I offer would cost about $50, $55 a month. Assuming your company has more than 20 employees on the plan, you need not do anything about enrolling in Medicare until you decide on a date to leave your employer plan. At that point, because you have been actively at work and covered by creditable coverage, you can transfer seamlessly from your current coverage to Medicare without any concern about medical history. Your choice is to make that change on October 1st or any month of your choice after that. My only suggestion would be to enroll online in Part A of Medicare sometime next August or September for an October 1st start date because it is free of charge. That is not a critical decision, however. If you have any other questions, please be sure to let me know. If you prefer to have a phone conversation, I'm happy to do that as well. When your target date to slow down or retire approaches, I would be honored to assist you in acquiring your Medicare-related insurance. So I was feeling pretty smug and proud of myself. I almost hurt my arm patting myself on the back for my well-constructed answer. And then she wrote back and she said, thank you for responding so quickly. And then here's the reminder that I completely overlooked that she's already accepting Social Security payments. She says, since I'm already receiving Social Security benefits, aren't I automatically enrolled in Medicare Part A and Part B when I turn 65? Yeah, that was the thing I overlooked. She said, would I have to tell them I don't want that if I continue coverage at work? And I said, excellent point. They will send you notification of your Medicare enrollment, and it will include a reply card. You will want to return the reply card to indicate that you will not take Part B until sometime in the future when you will initiate the enrollment process. So, and then she wrote back again and said, okay, that makes sense. Thanks a lot. I'll talk to you in the future. What are we doing time-wise, Randy? Have we burned up most of the morning? Is the audience about ready to hang up and discuss?
We are counting down from 36 seconds.
Oh, really? So I guess I could do another short one. Let me do that. Hi, Douglas. Are you still helping people enroll in Medicare? I'm moving from California to Texas. I was doing a change of address for Aetna when the agent informed me that I had to re-enroll for Medicare or else I would be disenrolled. Is that true? If it is, can I do this with you? And she said, thanks. And this is Terry. And I said, Hi, Terry. It's great to have the opportunity to help you again. She is a client of mine from last year sometime. The good news is you have been misinformed about Medicare. Your Medicare Parts A and B, as well as your United American Medicare supplement, are good anywhere in the United States and possessions. The bad news is that your drug plan is only good in your particular area of California. We will have to do another application for the least expensive plan available in your new location. It's likely to be the same plan from the same company, but when you return the attached questionnaire, I will run it through the black box and we'll see what the result is. And so I did that and I was right. The same company that she has offers the least expensive Part D prescription drug coverage for her in her new location in Texas. And so we had to fill out a new application. Although it seems to me now I should check on the status because I have not seen her name float to the surface in my pile of work to do. So I'm gonna consider that a reminder to follow up and see where we are with Terry's application. So now I bet we've crossed over that magical line.
The crickets have chirped.
I haven't heard those crickets in so long, I've forgotten what they sound like.
I always try to catch it before they go if I have my mic open, but every once in a while they'll sneak past me.
But then you get to hear them, but I'm yakking away over here and I don't get to hear them. So it's a nice little time. It's better than a clanging alarm or, you know, a buzzer of some kind.
That's true. You know, speaking now, obviously crickets are different than locusts.
Yes, they are.
I read someplace on the internet the other day that I don't know whether this was just a particular area or whether it was just in general, but I read somewhere on the internet the other day that we as in the United States population has accomplished basically killing off the locusts.
Really? I don't think that's true at all. The biggest batch of locusts come out every 17 years in most places, but there is also a smaller batch that comes out every 13 years. And then there are a lot of confused locusts that come out here and there willy-nilly. And so, frankly, I don't think that we've killed them all. They're just hiding from us.
Oh, well, that could be. That could be. That's a good idea. I'm going to have to do a little bit more research on that because when I initially read that, Doug, we've managed to kill off all the locusts. You know, I go, nah, that can't be right.
Exactly right. It's a bunch of tree huggers that are telling you that to scare you into giving money to their favorite causes, just like the polar bears. They've been saying the polar bears are dying off, and that's a load of crap. There are more polar bears out there now than there ever used to be. So I believe you're drawing information from unreliable sources. That would be my guess.
You're probably absolutely right on with that because I'm going to have to check it out. I really hate to think we've killed all the locusts because, you know, it kind of makes me sad that every 17 years I don't have to look for them.
No, that's you can start looking for them every 13 and 17. When I was, I think, 7 years old, so I'm going to guess 1955. I told you that my parents gave me a pup tent for Christmas. I was so excited that summer I was going to sleep in my pup tent every night. Well, that was the first year I had ever seen locusts. We had moved to Illinois from Oklahoma, and my tent filled up with locusts that crawled up out of the ground and thought they were flying up to the branches of the mature oak trees on our property, our 4 acres in Wayne, Illinois. But no, they just wound up crawling out of the ground and flying up to the tent material. And then they shed their skin. And frankly, the inside of my pup tent was all full of these ugly skins of locusts. And they were just so disgusting to a little kid like me that I never used my tent ever again.
That sounds like a nightmare. Most children would say, oh my God, there's all kinds of locust skeletons hanging on the inside of my tent. I'm going to be marred for life.
Well, that's kind of what it was, but you make it sound weirder than I thought about at the time. So you make it sound like I'm a little pussy. And I probably was. Man, those things were frightening. But then I wound up getting married, and we lived in a place that was in Illinois, and they said, oh boy, the 17-year locusts are coming out this year. And I thought, hell, I'm packing up and I'm going someplace where they don't have locusts. But it turned out I didn't have to do that, because our 6-acre property had been part of a pasture. And so there weren't a lot of mature trees, and there were no locusts to come out of the ground, fly up to the tree, and then shed their skin and drop eggs for the next generation. So there was no ongoing tradition of having locusts in that piece of property. And I didn't have any, and you know, Mary wandered out to look for them and didn't find any. So that was pretty cool that we didn't have to suffer the locust invasion.
I totally agree.
Yeah. But you know, there are other places, like I said, where they come out 13 years. Sometimes they come out at 13 and 17. And so they come out at the same time every, I don't know, 112 years or something. I saw the math on it one time, and I don't know what the computation there is, but I know that 1955 was my horrifying year. And I'll bet if you add a bunch of 17s, you'll get to the next year that we can expect a locust invasion.
And I will do that.
Yes, but the audience is hoping that you won't do it while they're being forced to listen.
Okay, well, audience, thank you so much for joining us today. We always enjoy having you. We look forward to seeing you next time, because without you guys, it's just me and Doug sitting here talking to ourselves. And it really is not that much fun over the course of time, but we have a lot of fun when you're with us. So today you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma and the expert on Oklahoma locusts.
Bye-bye.